Hi, I'm Carmen LaBurge. Thanks for listening to the podcast of Mornings with Carmen LaBurge.
Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. And I won't worry about tomorrow. I'm trusting.
Today is the day. Good morning. It is May the 14th, 2019. It is Tuesday. This is Mornings with Carmen, and I'm Carmen LaBurge. Today, I want to lead off with a story that was, well, it was headline news yesterday, so I don't know. Will it still be headline news today? I think that is a good question, certainly in Georgia. One of the things that popped on the news last night that you may or may not be aware of is that Doris Day died. She was 97 years old. I don't know if you remember Doris Day. Are you old enough to remember Doris Day? If you're not, what I want to do this morning here just for a couple of minutes is juxtapose Doris Day, who died earlier this week at the wonderful old age of 97, and Alyssa Milano, who is an actress who is currently leading the charge nationally against fetal heartbeat legislation by championing what she calls a sex boycott. So in Doris Day's heyday, which you may not be old enough to remember, I am not old enough to remember, but my mom is. So in Doris Day's heyday, she was she was always a joyful person, but she played these joyful roles, and she played characters who might best be described as wholesome and chaste, even when she was being chased. So she was being chased by men, and she was making the choice at every opportunity, at every turn, in every relationship to be a woman who was chaste, C-H-A-S-T-E, biblical abstinence, no sex outside of marriage. In case we have to define these terms today. Now, today, we have an actress, Alyssa Milano, crusading for the slaughter of the innocents and wielding as her weapon a sex boycott. Now, I just want you to pause for a moment and think with me, because I think that our initial reaction and response is negative. And what I would like for us to actually acknowledge is that what Alyssa Milano is advocating is actually called chastity. Okay. So unless she's advocating that people who are married actually withhold sex, which is just a bad idea on so many levels, don't go there. But if what she is talking about is single women choosing not to have sex as a weapon against fetal heartbeat legislation across the country, then I say, great. Chastity is a much preferred method to birth control over abortion. Chastity is a much preferred method of birth control to abortion. So if women who don't want to risk having a baby were chaste in the spirit of, you know, Doris Day, wholesome actress who we're celebrating the life of, the number of abortions in our culture due to, now we would still have some abortions. I recognize that because there would still be crimes of rape and incest. There would still be instances where the life of the mother is at genuine risk, but those would be rare. They would be rare. They would be exceptional if women were not having sex outside of marriage. And for those of you who are now going to send me a bevy of emails that not every person who's married wants to have kids, I just want to say there is birth control available. So when you are using abortion as your form of birth control, you're doing it wrong. The very best form of birth control is actually that which Alyssa Milano is advocating, that women would be chaste. Outside of marriage, women would be chaste. So I am absolutely not supporting in any way, shape, or form that anybody who is married withhold sex from their partner. That is not what we're talking about. That is only going to lead to other harms. What I am saying is that Milano is advocating for the very thing that many of us would argue is the right conversation to be having with unmarried women. Don't have sex. It's called abstinence. It's virtuous. In the language of the era of Doris Day, it's wholesome. It's chaste. So turning from Hollywood to the intersection of Washington and Wall Street and Main Street, we're going to talk tariffs. I know these are this is a big concern for all of us as consumers, but really, really grave concern for America's farmers. So you are you're thinking of all those suckling pigs out there. You're thinking of the soy that you're planting, and you're wondering what it's going to be worth if we actually get into a full-blown trade war with China. We're going to talk about that next with Tommy Binion from the Heritage Foundation. You're listening to Mornings with Carmen.
I'm just a bill. Yes, I'm only a bill. And I'm sitting here on Capitol Hill. Well, it's a long, long journey.
That is the walk-up music for Tommy Binion from the Heritage Foundation at the Daily Signal. You can check him out on LinkedIn, Thomas Binion. Hey, welcome back.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. It's great to be back with you. You know, that's got to be the best walk-up music out there. It just pumps me up more than any heavy metal song could pump up a baseball player. I'm ready to go.
Well, and it's the music of our childhood. It's at least the music of my childhood. Like, I love it. It makes me smile. It makes me happy. I can see that little bill trying to walk up to Capitol Hill. I love it. Okay, so let's talk about trade, and specifically let's talk about China. Where are we this morning?
Well, few would hesitate to characterize this as a trade war. President Trump has been negotiating a broader economic deal with the Chinese. We got pretty close maybe 2 weeks ago, and the Chinese backed out of that and decided we want to renegotiate from the start. And the U.S. response to that, led by President Trump, was to impose a tariff on some $250 billion in Chinese imports. Okay, well, goods flow both ways. And so now China has announced that they will impose, I think it's June 1st, a tariff on a certain number, I think it's something like $60 billion, of U.S. exports to China. And that includes many agricultural products. So, you know, it's this standoff where we're proving we can harm their economy. They're trying to prove they can harm our economy. And the question, I think, for both nations, and it's a very important one, are these tactics in a negotiation that will ultimately lead to a broader economic deal? If that's the case, then I think that at the end of the day, the markets are going to love it and the economy is going to respond positively. However, if because this is happening in public on the global stage, if these become entrenched positions and the tariffs are not temporary tools to strengthen your hand in a negotiation, but permanent fixtures in order to just harm the other nation or at least make sure that the harm is mutual. Well, now we've got a permanent problem for the economy, and I think that ultimately it's going to be an anchor on an economy that President Trump has breathed a lot of life into. So that's the question. Are these temporary? Are these just talking points in a negotiation, or are these here to stay? And if so, we better be prepared for some economic losses.
So I'll bring the Christian worldview part of the conversation in and simply say that for those of us who are most interested in the gospel advance globally, we look at China and we say, you know, the church is growing there, but it's growing under tremendous persecution. We look at China and we see horrendous human rights violations. We look at China and we see people toiling in ways that God does not intend. We see authoritarianism. We see abuse. And so even though we also recognize that to China, we have become a great debtor nation in terms of who owns American debt, I guess, Tommy, there's a part of me that's like, you know, we may have to tighten our belt here for a period of time in order to get back to the place where what we are exporting and what we are seeking to influence in terms of the world is more the gospel than simply, you know, the exportation of American consumerism, which seems to be, you know, sort of at the root of all of this. Now, as soon as I say that, I recognize the real harm that is done to individuals and families and farms when we're talking about these kinds of tariffs. But I also just recognize that we're way out of whack when it comes to China.
Yeah, it seems that the news coverage has made everything else, culture, religion, democracy, immigration, really all the different forms of exchange between two nations in 2019, information technology, what goes over the internet, all of that is now, whether it's because of the news coverage or reality or presidential leadership, it's all secondary to the economic struggle. What we can trade with them and what the price will be is now primary. And maybe, as you point out, there are other things that deserve our attention. There are other types of exchanges between nations that deserve our attention. Now, I don't think any of those exchanges right now are positive between the U.S. and China. Certainly, that China is not following the U.S. lead, as you pointed out, on human rights and the persecution of the Uyghurs, religious tolerance and religious freedom and the free flow of information. Those are areas where the U.S. excels and areas where I think we ought to be very concerned about the Chinese. But it seems like this first issue up to bat is the economy, and that seems to always be the case. And maybe you're right. Maybe we should focus on other things just as much.
Okay, so I would like to turn a little toward home when we come back. I'd love to talk about getting an update on the House investigation of the president, and then touch on the Equality Act. That's up next here with Tommy Binion, who is visiting us from the Daily Signal. Good morning. We're glad you're awake. We're glad you're with us. Tommy Binion is here with me. We are talking about headline news, particularly from within the Beltway. That is Washington, D.C. So, Tommy, give us a read-in. I know we learned overnight that Attorney General Barr appointed the Connecticut U.S. attorney to investigate the investigators looking into the origins of the Russia investigation. What else is going on in terms of investigations, one of the other, in Washington?
Yeah, so there are two ongoing requests from the United States House to the president that are escalating even today. The first is the Mueller report. Of course, Bob Mueller finished his investigation, filed his report with the Department of Justice. It was then redacted legally and appropriately and released to the public. House Democrats would like the entire report unredacted, even though it is available to some of them in a secure location. They would like it to be available in its entire form to them. So they have subpoenaed it, and then they have begun proceedings in the committee level to hold the attorney general in contempt in order to try and get that unredacted Mueller report. Now, the second thing is the president's tax returns. Another committee, the Ways and Means Committee, has subpoenaed his tax returns after filing a motion to the IRS that they should that they shall release the president's tax returns to the committee. They're citing a obscure law that allows them to retrieve any tax returns if there is a legitimate legislative purpose. Of course, the president's administration, the IRS, the Department of Justice have refused, saying that there is no legitimate legislative reason to release the president's tax returns. Now, all that is ongoing. I don't think all of it will amount to a hill of beans. I'm not sure they're going to get the unredacted Mueller report, and I'm not sure they're going to get the president's tax returns. But let's just think back to when the Democrats took over the House majority. They told us this is what was going to happen. They told us, basically, we are going to use the powers granted in us now that we are in the majority to investigate the president. We are going to hamper him at every turn. We are going to hold on to his ankles and drag our feet. That attitude is in place of an attitude that I would prefer, that is, let's find where we can work together. Are there areas of common agreement? Let's move that legislation. I think the American people are reassured by the Mueller investigation's completion that the president has done no wrong, and they're ready to move on. But clearly the news this month is that the Democrats in Congress are not ready to move on quite yet.
Okay, so one of the places where the Democrats in Congress are really trying to move things forward is on the Equality Act. We have talked about the Equality Act a number of times here on the show, actually later in today's program at the top of the second hour. Dr. David Stevens from the Christian Medical and Dental Association will be back, and he and I are going to talk about the Equality Act again. But give us some of your perspective on it. I know that there are all kinds of articles and commentaries posted at dailysignal.com for folks who want to get really read in from a number of directions on the Equality Act. But go ahead and give us your top line.
Sure. So this will get a vote on Friday. It has the support, the co-sponsorship of every single Democrat except for one, Colin Peterson. And what the bill does is it makes sexual orientation and gender identity, according to the federal law, the same as race, as sex, as those other immutable characteristics. That's a word we used a few weeks ago, characteristics you can't change. It makes sexual orientation and gender identity equal to those in terms of their protection from discrimination. Now, that sounds okay if you just give it that 15-second sound bite there, but the truth is, it's extraordinarily problematic to add those mutable characteristics, those things that you choose, to that list of characteristics the federal government is interested in protecting. So let's do a few examples of why that's problematic. An application of that law could mean that a doctor could be forced, coerced by the federal government to harm a child, in their view, not provide medical treatment, but block them from going through puberty and eventually help them transition into a transgender man or a transgender woman, even if that doctor does not believe that's the appropriate course. The same would go for a mental health professional who is counseling such a child. There would be federal regulation that prohibits them from telling that child the truth. This also has implications in sports, athletics. Think about women competing against transgender individuals who were born men but now compete as women. They can't win. Can those individuals get scholarships under Title IX? Can they rob a girl or a woman of a college scholarship that rightfully belongs to her because she earned it? It's all very, very problematic. Should a Christian school be forced to hire a gay person who does not profess to believe in their faith? And so the sweeping implications of this are really causing people from all walks of life to oppose this legislation. But we will see near unanimous Democratic support for this in the House on Friday. It does not have a future beyond that. But it is clear that this has become a plank in the progressive platform. And therefore, we are very concerned about it.
Okay, so we have a lot of listeners in the 7th District of Minnesota. Colin Peterson serves you in the United States Congress. He needs to hear from you today that you appreciate, you support him. You are happy that he is not supporting the Equality Act. He is currently standing all by himself. Don't resist today. If you live in Thief River Falls, he's got a district office there. If you are listening in the Fargo-Moorhead area, and you happen to be on the Minnesota side of the border, you are in the 7th District. If you live just north of our Sioux Falls signal, and you're listening this morning on AM 1270, we're talking about your representative. And so there are lots of folks listening this morning who are in the 7th District of Minnesota. Colin Peterson needs to hear from you. He needs to know that you are supporting him as he's standing alone in terms of his opposition to the Equality Act. He needs to know that you are with him in opposition to this particular bill. Tommy, we got to leave it right there. Thank you so much for joining us. We want to hear the next time you're on, we want an update from the Supreme Court. I know there are a number of cases of interest to many of us, but we're going to have to just hold that off till next time.
You bet. Looking forward to it.
All right. Hey, thanks so much. All right, friends, let's take a minute to lighten up. So there's a lot of young people today who are looking beyond high school to college, looking beyond college to career or adulthood or adulting, if you want to call it that these days. And they're under a lot of pressure. It's a pressure cooker out there in terms of being a young person. Technology, just a culture that's just cynical, a lot of negativity. I mean, I don't know if you've been paying attention to like media that is consumed by a lot of young people today, but it's dystopian. It's dark. They have all kinds of relationship concerns that we may or may not have had when we were younger. There is instant access to information, but there is not only a lot of anxiety among young people today, there's severe depression, there's isolation, there's loneliness. They don't know how to build relationships nor community, and they struggle with a sense of purpose. And so how are we going to help them at those points of transition, and how are we going to equip them to navigate the stress of this period of life? Well, up next, Shelby Abbott is going to be here. Shelby has been engaged in college ministry for a long time, and he has now shared with us in a book called Pressure Points, A Guide to Navigating Student Stress, how to actually equip young people today to just be gospel people, be Jesus people, even in the midst of all of the very real struggles of this stage of life. That's up next here on Mornings with Carmen. Okay, so Susie Larson is going to be part of the leadership of the Northwestern Christian Writers Conference, July 12th and 13th at the University of Northwestern St. Paul. If you want to interact with not only Susie, but others like Robin Jones-Gunn and Gary Thomas, you can sign up today, register today at NorthwesternChristianWritersConference.com. That's NorthwesternChristianWritersConference.com. It's a two-day event. July 12th and 13th. It's at the University of Northwestern St. Paul. You can have one-on-one time with a literary agent or a publisher or another author. You can get personalized feedback on your writing. And there's all kinds of breakout sessions that are definitely going to fit your interests. So you want an opportunity to network with industry professionals and other writers and craft your craft? The Northwestern Christian Writers Conference is the place you want to be. July 12th and 13th. You can register now. NorthwesternChristianWritersConference.com.
At its core, racism is a heart problem, a problem of sin. This is Jim Darlow. Although some view it as a political problem with political solutions or as an economic problem with economic solutions, foundationally, racism is a spiritual problem. Although government support can be useful on some issues regarding racism, its funds, programs, and laws will not change the human heart because racism is a violation of biblical truth. Genuine racial healing will require repentance before God for resentment against those with a different skin color or ethnic culture. Certainly we can and should call out blatant racism when we encounter it, but not as a political weapon. As always, though, after self-reflection, we must evangelize others in hopes the Holy Spirit would lead them first to repentance and subsequently into the glorious kingdom. There's more at wellversed.world.
Okay, with us now, Shelby Abbott, the author of Pressure Points. Shelby works with college students, and he is offering us a guide to navigating student stress in his book, Pressure Points. Shelby, welcome to Mornings with Carmen.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
So college students, actually people in this age cohort, right? We're not just talking about college students. We're talking about everybody that's sort of in this age band. That we would consider sort of college age. So sometimes we're talking about students who are a little younger than that. Sometimes we're talking about people who aren't actively students right now. But that's kind of your area of expertise. And so that's the target that we're shooting at here. What kind of stress and pressure do people in this age range and people specifically in college, what kind of pressures are they experiencing today?
Well, I think it's a normal type of pressure that any person would go through on a day-to-day basis. But I think it's heightened when you're in college because there's a number of decisions that you're making at that time that will affect large parts of your future. On top of the fact that being in academics for the first time in a concentrated environment where that's all you're doing as your quote-unquote job brings with it a number of different pressures that are unique to that period of time in your life.
So we're talking with you today because this is actually an arena of real expertise that you have. Talk with folks about your experiences, you know, over time with college students and why you wrote this book right now.
Yeah, I became a Christian when I was in college, January of my freshman year, and my whole life was turned around in a great way. And so when I graduated from college, it was an easy decision for me to come on staff with the organization called Crew. And so that was back in the summer of 1999 when I graduated. So I've been doing college ministry ever since. So it's been 20 years, which is sad that I'm that old, but it's actually true. I really wanted to write this book because I wanted to write something to myself in college and wish I had had that kind of a resource, something that addressed kind of the bigger life questions, like what's my purpose? What does God want from me? What's God's will for my life? Things like that. And then also relationships, not necessarily just romantic ones, of course that, but also what's some good advice on how to relate with my parents during this formative period of time, friendships, things like that. And then where is God in the hard times, the difficult times? I just really felt like there wasn't an all-encompassing guide to really help me at that time. So that was my aim, to really write a book to any Joe college student who walks with Jesus and need some good wisdom about how to live my life.
So the challenges that college students face today are different than the ones. I mean, if you graduated in 99, I graduated sometime before that. The challenges that that students are facing today are very different than past generations. And I would say that, you know, even 20 years out, we're in a different generation. So 25 years out for me, you know, I'm definitely in a different generation. I am now my friends that I went to high school with, their kids are now in college. And so talk with us about how the pressures are different, particularly, I mean, I think of particularly related to technology, but there's also been some mammoth shifts in culture where, you know, being a Christian was actually kind of a cool subcultural thing to do when I was in college. I'm not sure that's true anymore.
Right. I would agree with you. Technology has changed the game. When 2007 rolled around and the iPhone came out, everything changed in a number of different ways. So that's one of the things. Obviously, I'm writing, like I said, I write the book to myself, but as if I were a college student today. So in light of things like smartphones, social media, different types of ways of communicating with one another, the whole game is different now. And so I really wanted to make sure that I was addressing relevant topics, relevant issues to students who have a smartphone and have probably had one for many years in their pocket. That's one of the things that is culturally completely different. So I think that the issues that people wrestle with are the same issues that have been going on for a long time. I think just technology and social media, texting and stuff like that has forced them to the surface in kind of a new way.
All right. And what you are proposing, what you really unpack in this book are what we would describe as gospel solutions. What do you mean by that phrase, gospel solutions?
Yeah, that's a term that kind of can be vague depending on what your understanding of that is. While I said like the things that people wrestle with are common things, it's one of those subjects, though, that we're going to look to kind of solve the problems of our life by helping to heal the different stressors that happen, the different issues, the different feelings of loneliness and emptiness. And really the solution to those issues in our life is what it means to have a personal relationship with God through the person of Jesus Christ. So that I really try to answer the questions behind the questions, the issues behind the issues. So you might be dealing with loneliness, fear, anxiety, all of those kind of things. And instead of looking for solutions in programs or self-help, we need to look to what it means to have a relationship with God and allow him to fill us up in a way that nothing else can.
Well, and part of the beauty of that is, first of all, it's true, right? But it's also inexhaustible. I'm never going to get to the bottom of nor exhaust God's grace. I'm never going to Jesus is never going to get bored with me. He's, you know,
right.
The Holy Spirit is never gonna say, okay, you know what? You know, I've had enough time with you. Like, right? So, I just think that the beauty of this is that we're not telling students, you know, say these three sentences and this poem, and you know, everything is gonna, you're just gonna skip along merrily along your way. What we're saying is, life is hard. It's always going to be hard. It never is not hard. And so you might as well learn now how to really be invested in a relationship with Jesus in order that you can walk with him and talk with him. Yes, along life's merry way, but also in the valleys of loneliness and despair and challenge and frustration and failure that are going to come. And I think this is such an honest, it's so honest to tell young people this today instead of painting a picture of the future that is, you know, frankly, wonderful in terms of, you know, acknowledging that heaven is real, but heaven on earth is not where we quite live yet, right? The kingdom has not yet fully come.
Yeah, I don't want to candy coat anything. And so really what I wanted to do in the written form is kind of put my arm around you and guide you through this process and say, hey, number one, I get it. I was there. And number two, I've been doing this a long time. And so I understand the issues that you're wrestling with. Life is going to be full of wonderful things and incredibly difficult things. But let me help you to understand what that looks like. In a healthy way that points you in the right direction towards Jesus, but also with lots of humor in it as well.
Yeah, I was going to say, you don't candy coat anything, but you coat everything with humor. Hey, Shelby Abbott is going to still be with me after the break. So let's take a quick break and then let's come back. Let's continue talking about pressure points. And specifically, we're going to hone in on the fear of missing out. That's next here on Mornings with Carmen. Talking now with Shelby Abbott, author of Pressure Points, A Guide to Navigating Student Stress. You can find Shelby online at Shelby Abbott. That's two B's and two T's. ShelbyAbbott.com. You can find him on Twitter and Instagram at Shelby Abbott. Also on Facebook, Shelby Abbott. And it's interesting to me, you know, an abbot is a father or an ecclesiastical title given to the head of a monastery in lots of different traditions, including Christianity. So I find it like wonderful that you, as Shelby Abbott, are pastoring people in what is really not monastic anymore, which is the college experience. But you are shepherding their hearts through this experience of transitioning from a place where they live in the context of their home with their parents, and then they're going to be making homes of their own and really be the not just the curators, but the creators of the culture that we all inhabit in the future. And so I find it wonderful that you are Abbott.
Yeah, thank you. That's one T though, right?
Oh, is it? Oh, yeah, you're right. I don't know, but you're an extra T. Okay, you're Abbott with an extra T.
Yeah, thanks.
We won't try to figure that part out. Okay, so let's get back to the book. The book is Pressure Points. Let's talk about specifically the fear of missing out, because I think that for college students who are Christians, when we start talking about, you know, making choices that are aligned with Christ and aligned with the will of God, there are going to be some spaces and places and activities that we intentionally do not participate in when we're in college. But that's going to be an immediate conflict with this fear of missing out. So just talk about that. For adults who don't know what FOMO is, what is it and how is it exacerbated by technology?
Yeah, I think it really was thrust to the forefront of culture when, like I said, when the iPhone came out, mostly because social media in general paints a kind of false picture of how people are actually living their lives. You can be really frustrated, upset, going through difficult times, but then post a picture that things are all great and hunky-dory. And then when you post that, people automatically believe that your life is doing great. And as a result, there's this inevitable wish that I wish my life looked like that. I wish I had that kind of money. I wish I was in that environment with you. On top of the fact that now when it comes to live updates on things like Snapchat and Instagram stories, people can know that other people are doing things without you. And there's that constantly wondering of, why didn't they invite me to come out with them? Why don't I have friends that that do the things that they do, and you feel like you're missing out on stuff, and inevitably causes this anxiety in our lives, in particular with students, that keeps skyrocketing over and over and over again. So we want to help people, again, to be content in their relationship with Jesus in a way that they can look at other things that are going on out there in the world and go, good for them, but be secure in their relationship with God.
Okay, and then let's talk specifically about dating. I just think dating has really – it's just – here's one of my trouble spots, Shelby, is that dating seems actually detached today from the purposes for which God created courtship. And so dating seems to have lost some of its depth in terms of, you know, God's intent, in terms of preparation for that one lifelong relationship. And yet I know young people who they are having sex with people that they're not even dating. Like, there's this incredible culture shift that has taken place in relationship to relationships and how those are defined and where those take place and what those include. So in terms of your experience with college students, particularly those who are seeking to walk with Christ, give us a little insight into how hard that is today.
Yeah, dating is actually even one of those phrases or one of those words that people go, oh, that's something that my parents did. They kind of casually move into it now on the whole, you know, stereotypically. And they call it, oh, we're not together. We're just hanging out. We're just friends, but we like to do things together every now and then. There's not a whole lot of officialness to things. So I'd like to talk about the intentionality that you need to have. If you want to get a job, you don't go stand in the lobby of the building where the job or where the employer is and just kind of hope that someone walks up to you and offers you a job. You're intentional about it. You put your resume together. You set up an appointment. You put on nice clothes. You get freshened up and you're prepared for it. And that's just something is like a job. How much more important is a romantic relationship that could last you for the rest of your life instead of swiping right on a dating app or kind of casually text messaging someone, hey, you want to do something sometime? Why not be way more intentional about stuff? Because it communicates, hey, this is important and I value you as a person. So that's the game, again, changed with technology, with the iPhone when it came out, with when smartphones kind of became prolific. It really helps people to kind of be lazy about relationships. And what I talk about is trying to be intentional instead of just letting things kind of come to you, go after them in a very purposeful way that honors Jesus and brings glory to him. So I talk about, the physicality of modern romance as well and how we need to approach it from a godly perspective.
All right. I love it. I think it's timely. It is attentive both to the concerns of young people and their parents. And so let me encourage you to check out Pressure Points, A Guide to Navigating Student Stress. There's an excellent review of it posted today at thegospelcoalition.org. You can find the author, Shelby Abbott, at Shelby Abbott, that's two B's and two T's, .com. You can find him on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at Shelby Abbott. Shelby, thanks so much for being here today.
Thanks for having me, Carmen.
All right, we're going to take a break, and then we're going to be back to wrap up the first hour of Mornings with Carmen. Okay, so do you remember when we talked about praying for every, you know, every campus across America? So I'm wondering if you've been doing that. I'm wondering if as you drive around and you're even driving past a college campus, some of you live in the context of a college campus, are you prayer walking those environments or even prayer driving? Maybe you pass by, maybe even interstate exits where there's a sign, right? There's a giant green sign and it has the name of a college or a university, some expression of higher ed at that exit. And I want you to intentionally today pray for the students, for the faculty, for the administration. I want you to pray for the people who are on the board of trustees. I want you to pray for what books get into the library. Yes, colleges still have libraries. I want you to pray for a hedge of protection around and over those colleges and universities. And so as I drive around, right, I mean, I pass by Williamson, I pass by Trevecca, I pass by Vanderbilt, I pass by one expression of the University of Tennessee. It's in Murfreesboro. I mean, I'm on and on and on. Tennessee Tech. I mean, I got them all. I mean, they're just all. It's ubiquitous. You're probably like me. Belmont. I mean, on and on and on. You probably live in a community where there is a college or a university. I want us to be praying for the people who inhabit that place, for the people who attend there, for the people who teach there. And so let me encourage you to do that. If you don't know a college student, this is the season, or a high school student moving into college, this is the season during which they are going through what we call commencement. It's an opportunity for those of us who are older to unashamedly speak wisdom and blessing into their lives. So go find one. Go find somebody who's making the transition from high school to college or college into the workplace. And I want you to actually speak words of wisdom and blessing into their life. Offer to be their friend and their mentor in the stage of life that's ahead. We've talked about it in Growing With. We've talked about it with the book, A Different College Experience. And we've talked about it today as Pressure Points. Lots of opportunity right now to engage the next generation with the gospel of Jesus Christ and his love.
Thanks for listening to this podcast of Mornings with Carmen LaBurge from Faith Radio. If you haven't, you can subscribe to automatically receive the podcast through iTunes or the Google Play Music app. That way, you never miss an episode. It's also available anytime at myfaithradio.com.